Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
I called in sick. I don't work in the rain.
Well, I kind of mailed that in.
You can't deliver mail.
Why not?
Yeah, whatever.
I guess you're right. It's just walking around and putting it in the boxes.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
It's Brian Hayes and Bruce Arthur from The Star rolling into a long weekend. This one doesn't really have any feel to it. There's no feel to the August long weekend. It just kind of comes and it shows up, and then you realize that you have Monday off, but in the summer, a lot of people take time off anyway, so it doesn't hold the same meaning. You know, like when you have Thanksgiving off, you've been waiting a while, the summer's been a while.
And family comes together. There's a meaning to Thanksgiving and
yes,
to Christmas. And the Canada Day long weekend, there's a lot more surrounding that.
And May 2-4 is like the start of summer in a lot of ways, too,
yeah,
right?
We used to go camping on the May 2-4, my wife and I, before we had kids. And the last time we did, a tornado hit the other end of the park. And we were like, you know what? Camping on the May 2-4 is for suckers.
Check, please.
Just let's wait until a little later in the summer to do it. But for me, the August long weekend, I mean, this is not complaining. I take pretty much summer off, right? Like, these are the 2 days I'm working between July 7th and Labor Day.
Right, exactly.
So, like, the long weekend just means I have to watch for traffic.
That's what I'm saying.
That's it.
Like, and a lot of people are still working throughout the summer, so I'm not saying it's not valuable. It is. Like, I'm off on Monday, and I'll be back on Tuesday, so I'm looking forward to a three-day weekend. But I've taken some time off. I'm going to take some more time off in August,
yeah,
and it has no feel to it. Like, I would prefer to kind of save this and use it somewhere else.
Yeah,
we should have a floating civic holiday.
Well, just like...
just every once in a while, we all get together, like a civic referendum type of thing. Someone launches a vote.
Very fast.
All right, this is what I picture, okay?
You know what we should do? We should chill out a little more. Let's have a citywide referendum,
yes,
in a metro area of 6 million people.
Right.
Let's do that. It's simple.
Where you need, a certain amount of votes. Like, I guess you couldn't expect every single person to vote on this. And maybe it's got to be provincial.
You know what you do? Here's what you do. You have a list of acceptable days that would be an extra three-day weekend in any given year. And then at the beginning of the year, you spin the wheel.
There you go.
Right? Okay, we're doing it in March this year.
Exactly.
This year's March.
That's what it is. It's a floater, and you have no idea, and it would be such a cool day. Like, the lottery day would be awesome. Like, when are we getting the floater? And maybe every once in a while, like, there's one, like, if it's the Wheel of Fortune, there's one that gives you, like, two floater days. So you're dying for whoever.
Every 10 years you get a double or something?
Exactly.
Now, I was reading this thing about what's called medium chill. Medium chill is a lifestyle, and I expect this to become as big as, like, van life. And what medium chill is, yeah, you know what, my bumper's dented, and I could probably, if I worked harder, I could get a bigger house. But my house is okay, and my car is okay. And I don't want to work more. I could make more money, but I don't want to necessarily make more money. What I want is to have work-life balance. Medium chill. When I work, I do my best. I try to accomplish things. I have ambitions. Whatever ambitions in life, I try to meet them. But I also value my non-work life as much or more, and actually make concrete measures to sacrifice one for the other. Like, that is...
very European lifestyle.
Exactly.
Right.
Europeans seem pretty happy, right?
They generally seem very happy.
Yeah.
Like, over there, it's just accepted in August. The whole continent is shut down.
Yeah.
Like, you go to Paris or London or something in August, like, everybody's on vacation, and, like, store signs are up that's like, don't come in here, we're not open. Like, why would we be open? We'll see you after Labor Day or whatever it is.
That's
September
great.
1st.
Well, remember how in Ontario you didn't used to be able to shop on Sundays, right? Like, that was part of the old Catholic Protestant, old.
Well, Chick-fil-A is bringing that back.
Are they really?
Well, Chick-fil-A, that down in the States, they're not open on Sundays, and they're coming up here, and I guess they're going to continue that rule up here, so it will not be open on
Sundays.
There
are other places to get chicken on a Sunday.
Yes.
Portuguese chicken kicks the hell out of anything.
It's the best, isn't it?
Anyway.
Portuguese chicken. Shout out.
Oh, my gosh. Good. God bless you, Portuguese chicken. But the idea, like, you should have options on a Sunday. It shouldn't be forbidden, but having, like, just a cultural relaxation around it that most people say, you know what? I think August is the perfect month to do it, where everyone just kind of goes, you know what? It's going to get awful at some point. Like, the winter's coming. And the closer you get to it, it just looms, where you have to harden your mind and your body for like 3 to 6 months of uncomfortable weather where the air feels like it hates you. So in August, yeah, for some reason, the air can still feel like it hates you for different reasons. But everyone just chill out.
Just relax,
just
people.
Just chill out.
Relax.
Let's not worry about the GDP in August.
Yes, exactly. And like people are writing in, this is the problem, that everyone's got a different lifestyle and different priorities. So this idea that we could collectively come together and pick a floater day is obviously impossible. It would lead to rioting in the streets. Mm-hmm. But someone just texting in saying, the Monday after the Super Bowl, that would get my vote. And that's the thing. Like, sports fans would be like, well, yeah, Monday after the Super Bowl is when I want a day off, which they've talked about in the States, making that like a holiday.
Kind of amazing it doesn't happen.
Yeah, considering like the whole country is partying on the Sunday night.
Yeah, like a third of the country about watches it, or a little more, almost half. So like, figure of the remaining people, probably half of them are working. It's a pretty high percentage.
And it's February. There's no other date that I can think of down there where it's a holiday. Like, they have a holiday in March, I think it's President's Day or whatever. Like, that's because that's what we did here, right, with Family Day. They're just like, well, we don't have anything in February, so we're just going to come up with one. It's Family Day now.
Yeah.
We need one. I think we're on to something here, man. We need floater days, Fridays, some Mondays.
I'm going to tweet out this Medium Chill article.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to send it to people again.
Yeah, I want to get to the bottom of that because that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Like, the European lifestyle, again, they work to live. And the idea that we live to work over here has always been, it always seemed like it made kind of sense.
We're kind of suckers, if you think about it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, though. Who's going to lead this charge? We need like a Daniel Day-Lewis and Gangs of New York kind of character to just lead us into the streets and be like, we're not doing it anymore.
Spartacus.
Yeah. Well, because everything I've read about four-day weekends, that there are three-day weekends, four-day work weeks, are incredibly beneficial for everybody, the companies included.
Yep.
Because people are much more prepared to work, and
focused.
They're fresh, they're focused, exactly. They feel as if their time has been valued by the company. They don't feel like they're being taken advantage of.
Yeah. It's the same way that the NHL should contract to 24 teams.
Right. And less games.
Higher quality. Fewer games.
If you could pick one or the other, what would you pick? Less teams or less games in a season?
Now, the problem with saying less teams, fewer teams, is that you're screwing over fan bases. You're saying you don't deserve it to have a team. You don't deserve to have a team. So that's unfortunate. If you were starting from scratch and reamending it tomorrow, I think I'd probably have fewer teams. I think just fewer teams, the quality of every game goes up. Well, that's what you want either way, right? The quality of the game goes up. So if you have 60 games instead of 80... You don't have those kind of... You know what the problem actually with that is? I just thought of this. In the NHL, the first 30 games are quite often kind of the best games because no one's that into it yet. That's when you get like the Leafs on opening night. What was it, 7-3 over the Jets?
Yeah.
And part of that was they started their own goalie, but part of that is early in the season. Guys aren't checking to the same level that they do as the season goes on. So how would it look in a 60-game season? So maybe I would definitely go.
I would 100%. Games. I would go less games. No. I would, because I think one of the great seasons we've had in the past 20 years was that shortened lockout season. Now, it happened to be the first time the Leafs have been in the playoffs for like 8 years, which probably gave it a bit of a different feel in this city, clearly, because the Leafs were actually good. I'm not sure those 48 games would have been so great if they finished third last in the standings. But what I do think football has always had and has always gotten right was you've got to leave your fans wanting more. You've got to leave them craving that next game.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL is the most lucrative league in pro sports, and it's got a 7-month off season.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying you need a 7-month off season, but they play once a week. Like, that's it. You get 16 games, and if you're lucky, some teams get to play a little bit more than that.
I've been waiting all day for Sunday night.
Exactly. Exactly, right? And that's what I think. If you could get the NHL down to 50 games or 60 games, and games are played every Wednesday and every Saturday, there's two nights a week that they play, and you know it, and you're waiting for it, and I think that would be brilliant. Now, again, none of these options are ever going to come to fruition.
No, probably not. Although the NBA has talked, Adam Silver's talked about looking at ideas to reduce the number of games played. And one reason the NBA could do it, and I don't think the NHL could, the NBA has way better, financially they just have more going for them, and TV contract's amazing. But also, they have storylines that carry them between games and between seasons. NBA free agency, for some fans, is their favorite time of the year. because there's just so much that happens. Like, the NBA has narratives. You don't have, your team can stink and you can still be invested in 10 NBA stories that are super interesting. The NHL does not have that. It just doesn't. There aren't enough transactions, enough personality, enough conflict, enough honesty, enough anything, because it's a button-down conservative league. And that may change, and I hope it does. I think it may happen a little bit with the Leafs, because I think Kyle Dubas is a guy who believes in his players having personality, that it could be good for them. But
that's an interesting take, because everything I hear him say is, you know, I learned a lot from Lou, and I wonder how much leeway he's going to have, because I kind of feel like that's going to be Shanahan's jurisdiction. Like, Shanahan is still the guy who, he's got to sign his name on that contract, too.
There are limits. Like, you can't just go ahead and do stuff that is detrimental to the team. But if you can show personality and Morgan Rielly is a guy who, when you talk to him, I talk to Morgan a lot, he's a funny, interesting guy, and that has no impact deleteriously on his hockey, does it? Does that make him a worse player?
One of my favorite interviews. He's a brilliant interview. He's a fun guy.
He's not afraid to say stuff. He's not afraid to make jokes. He's not afraid to be honest. And those things are things that in hockey have become like tribally enforced against. Like, you cannot do that.
But you also can't force a personality on someone. And this is where I see a bit of a holdup with the Leafs. Auston Matthews does not scream personality. John Tavares does not scream personality.
I think he might have a little more than people think. I think John Tavares could be an interesting guy.
What are you expecting his day-to-day routine to be, though? Do you think he speaks with the media every day? Do you think he's compelling?
I don't think he's going to be bothered by it. I think if you've talked to someone in the Islanders' room over the last 7 or 8 or 9 years, probably John Tavares has been the guy. He was very comfortable talking to us when he signed. He was comfortable hanging around afterwards and just chatting for a little bit. I think he'll be better at it, more comfortable at it than Auston Matthews is, because Auston Matthews does not enjoy it. Mitch Marner is a guy who I think could have actually quite a lot going on under the hood.
He could, for sure. Like, he seems to be a guy who is always enjoying himself. Although I think he's kind of at a crossroads. Like, I don't know if you saw his quote last week, but he was talking about the charity event that he put on last week, which was very well run. Like, I was up there for a couple of hours. We did a show in the afternoon, and he should be proud of himself. It went off really well.
That's like, not easy to do.
It's not easy to do, and you're putting your name on it, and everything seemed to go off well, and the reviews were just very, very well received. But he said, you know, he wants to be taken more seriously, because of all these guys on this team, the one who's considered the kid is Marner. Because he looks so young, and he's the smaller guy, and he plays with exuberance and seems to be jovial all the time. Yeah. And, you know, he scores and he jumps into the glass.
And it's just how he looks.
Right. But I hope that his impression of being taken more serious isn't, I can't give answers, I can't show personality, I have to act like Lou Lamoriello, and I always have to have my suit on and be clean shaven and
I don't think
hair
so.
I in
think
place.
The fashion aspect is actually an interesting one too, because think about how big a deal the arena walk-ins become in the NBA, right? It's competitive between guys in terms of just attracting attention, fashion, and guys feel like they are bigger because they get involved in the fashion world. I think there's a little bit of that among the Leafs, these Leafs, the young Leafs especially, and I think that's something that you could see a little more of this year. And again, it's baby steps. It's just tiny stuff in terms of doing things a little differently than every other guy wearing the same suit and the same toque in the NHL. But once it starts, you can at least have a tiny bit more.
There's nothing wrong with personality. There's nothing wrong with it.
Shouldn't be.
But I think the Leafs, because Shanahan was here during that season, was it in 2014, before they hired Lou and before they hired Babcock, and the year before the tank season, where they had Salute Gate and Kadri got suspended, and it was just an unmitigated disaster. And I hope that his instincts wouldn't lead him to believe that if he gives up an inch, they're going to take a mile. Because that team took a marathon. Like, they didn't just take a mile. They ran Carlisle out of town. They embarrassed Horacek to the point where Horacek is just a punchline in the hockey world now.
Yeah, it basically ended his career.
It basically ended his career because they treated him like a supply teacher. And that, I would guess, would always be in the back of the mind of Shanahan. Now, I don't know how Dubas feels about it, but we'll see. Dave Poulin will join us in the next hour. We'll get his take on that. We'll get into the Ottawa Senators scenario as well with Pooley. So this Ray Lewis quote, Ray Lewis is going into the Hall of Fame this week. And no one disputes the greatness of Ray Lewis on the field.
Sure.
Nobody disputes it. He's one of the great linebackers of all time, one of the great players, leaders, winners, two Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, just if you ever watched him play, you can make a case, and I have read cases where he's the greatest linebacker to ever play the game. He's also a guy who doesn't know when to shut up. I feel like he just starts talking, and he has no idea where he's going, no idea what he's trying to accomplish.
I wouldn't even be that charitable.
No?
I think this is a guy who is among the most deluded, narcissistic, fake street preachers there ever was.
He's got that preacher vibe to him, but it's a shady preacher
vibe.
Yeah,
it's the guy who built a mega church with your money.
Yeah, it's a shyster kind
that's,
of vibe
That's kind of how I look at Ray Lewis.
Well, I guess he was speaking to the media down there in Canton, and Lewis said the contagious positive energy surrounding his induction... That's not narcissistic at all. Oh, it's just so contagious. Look, everyone's so happy that I'm going into the Hall of Fame. Said it reminds him of his playing days. Quote, when I played, crime went lower in Baltimore. It's like nobody needs to be mad now. It's like everybody wants to be happy and celebrate, end quote. This is so good, though.
I'll say this.
I love that quote.
I will say this. The first statement in that. When I played, crime went lower in Baltimore. I got two things on this. One, it has been shown that with a popular enough sporting event, enough people will be watching that the crime rate actually drops. I don't think that was attributable to Ray Lewis. The second one, the obvious rejoinder, Ray Lewis went on trial for murder. The white suit he was wearing the night that those guys got stabbed and one of them died was never found. Technically, that did not occur in Baltimore. It happened in Atlanta. So the statement, when I played, crime went lower in Baltimore, does not necessarily countermand the fact that Ray Lewis had to be acquitted in a murder trial.
There's a part of me that just wants to put that aside and appreciate just how self-indulgent this quote is.
The lack of self-awareness is breathtaking.
Like, I was such a positive figure in Baltimore, one of the most crime-riddled cities in the United States.
Yeah.
That when I went out on the field 16 times a year, maybe 18 to 20 if you include the playoffs, mm-hmm. crime would just fall off the cliff.
And not just because of the Baltimore Ravens.
Right. Not because they were watching. No, because there was no reason to be mad anymore because Ray Lewis, number 52, was doing his dance before he ran out there.
Because of me.
Because of Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
This Zach Smith character from Ohio State, who's the guy right in the middle of this Urban Meyer situation, was the coach who's been alleged to have committed domestic assault against his estranged wife, his ex-wife. And he got fired for it in July, although I don't remember all the details about exactly why he got fired. But there's a long history with him and his ex-wife dating back to when they were in Florida working with Urban Meyer and now since he's been up in Ohio State. And I guess he is finally doing an interview, which I'm very intrigued by the idea that a lawyer would let him go on radio. But he's doing an interview with 105.7 The Zone in Columbus. And he said, quote, we had a volatile relationship. It was toxic. There was a lot of aggressive situations. I've never committed domestic abuse against her. Now, there were times that it got out of hand and I had to defensively restrain her. I never hit her, end quote.
Uh-huh.
So now he is saying, I never committed domestic abuse. So the Urban Meyer statement came out about a half an hour ago.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, there was a lot of legalese in the statement. It was clearly written by a lawyer, his lawyer. And I'm not convinced it's about saving his job. It may just be about saving his money. But now Zach Smith, who is the actual accused, is now doing radio and
blaming his wife.
Basically saying, I had to be defensive against her. So
I can't swear on this show, right?
No, you can't.
I'd like to. I mean, there are police records. The discussions, the texts among the other wives in the Ohio State program, among the coaching staff, like you see what his wife is saying. Who's going to believe Zach Smith? Like, go ahead and do this. Go ahead and have your interview on a Columbus radio station and try to do this. Who's going to believe a guy saying this? Like, there's nobody in the program who's saying, in the Ohio State program, as far as I can tell, who's saying, this guy's been unfairly accused.
Well, he's claiming he got fired because of the media uproar. I guess that, you know,
yeah?
Like,
is that what they call that?
We're tracking it on Twitter.
You know what that means? Somebody found out.
Well, yeah, it went public.
Like, if this had never happened, then you'd have a hell of a better defense than this.
I guess he's going on SportsCenter at 6 p.m., too. So he's doing the rounds, which I'm surprised.
Here's a guy we talked to yesterday, Dan Wolkin from USA Today. This is his characterization of the interview. This interview is wild, sad, embarrassing, and explosive. About sums it up.
Well, you're talking about a guy who his career is over. You would assume. I mean, we're thinking Urban Meyer is going to be in trouble. This is a guy who actually was allegedly committing this assault. So he's desperate. He's wounded. And now he's on the counterattack, I guess. Maybe this is an attack. I don't know. And it's difficult to track it on Twitter because there's no context to it in terms of the emotion, in terms of, you know, how he's actually expressing himself. But that's his defense. I didn't do it. I was just, you know, I was in a defensive position maybe multiple times. It was a volatile relationship. But like you say, that nobody will believe him. People will believe him. There will be people that will believe him. That's become abundantly clear, too, with the Me Too movement.
Well, we've seen that. Again, people cheer for their favorite celebrities to be more than just successful. They want them to be innocent, right? Like, there's still people who think OJ didn't do it. Congratulations to you. But I don't know. Like, I shouldn't be surprised. I shouldn't be surprised because this has been the playbook before. This has been the playbook for men who abuse women for a very long time. Either I didn't do it or she made me do it. That's part of what some abusive men say to their wives. They blame their wives. Stop making me hit you. And that's basically what Zach Smith just did when he went on the radio in Columbus. That's what it sounds like.
Well, that was the OJ defense, too. You just mentioned OJ for the longest time when he was beating the hell out of Nicole. It was always, well, you made me do it. Why do you make me do it? I believe there's audio of him when he's going on those rampages in the house when she's on the phone with the cops where he's in the background yelling, why do you make me do this? Why, you know, it's your fault. And those, remember that interview that came out recently? Soledad O'Brien was a part of the panel. I can't remember who had it. Was it Fox? There was an interview that OJ did like back 12 years ago that never got aired. And somehow these tapes came out. And I mean, he is obviously a sociopath. Like, O.J. Simpson is a guy who doesn't believe he did it. Or if he believes he did it, he believes he was justified in doing it. But even then, I remember there were some weird comments coming out of those interviews where he'd be like, you know, I still go to her grave and I yell at her. Like, why, you know, how did you put yourself in this position? I'm like, what is with you? Yep. Like, can someone get this guy behind bars? Because I don't know if it's safe to have him just roaming around society. And that's where he's at. Like, I got to be honest. I thought OJ would be, I thought he'd have a reality show by now or doing something. I guess he's just kind of laying low in Vegas.
Enough people agreed that OJ did it. And he basically got convicted for another stupid thing where he was stupid and did break the law. He got basically convicted for that on a murder charge. Like, the murder, his time in prison came later. But people, polite society agreed that OJ is not welcome here anymore. Here's the thing. That's a local Columbus radio interview. Now, it's bouncing out because it's on Twitter, but he's doing local first. He's about to go on SportsCenter in a little over half an hour. Like on ESPN, coast to coast. Everyone just got home on a Friday afternoon. You just turn on ESPN, and you're going to see him say, I would have guessed the exact same thing.
Which, again, I'm surprised Zach Smith, his lawyer, would allow him to do this. And also from his standpoint, to your point, now he's going public. Like now you're in the homes of people all over the country, all over the world. TSN will pick this up. It'll be on SportsCenter up here. It'll be on the website.
This is the story of the day. Like Urban Meyer has his defense, and Zach Smith has his defense.
Right.
And again, we shouldn't be surprised, but oh boy, this is an incredibly ugly situation, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way.
What doesn't these days?
Yeah. Well, Johnny Manziel's playing tonight, so there's a distraction for you if you're looking for something to happen on the field.
Former domestic abuser plays for Montreal Alouettes.
Making his debut in the CFL tonight. There's a segment.
Yeah, it's a good news feeling.
Rod Black will be calling a game on TSN tonight. Tiger is in the hunt down at the Bridgestone as well. He's 6-under on the tournament, 2-under on the day. He's through 15. So we'll keep an eye on what's up with Tiger. And got to get into some more of these hockey stories. Dave Pullen will join us just after 6 p.m. But we'll head to Montreal, tee up Johnny Football making his debut tonight. We'll get to that next. So I have been mistaken throughout the afternoon. I keep amping up this Manziel debut as if it's actually the biggest news. You want to know what the biggest news is?
I would love to know that.
Emma and Lockie Wiggle are getting a divorce. Are your kids Wiggles kids?
No.
They never got into the Wiggles?
Nope.
So you have no understanding of how difficult this is to accept.
It's going to shake out the playground?
Yeah, it's just tough news to...
Wait, are these real people or are they?
Yeah, so the Wiggles, they're Australian. It's a four-person group.
But they're actual people.
Human beings.
Human beings.
Emma and Lockie.
Because like on Teen Titans, there's not going to be a divorce on Teen Titans.
No, this is like the real deal.
Teen Titans Go, by the way, is the best show for kids like 7 to like whatever age.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one yet. I got a 2.5-year-old, so
you
I'm
can
still
watch
like kinda...
You can queue up Teen Titans Go and watch it and enjoy
okay.
it.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. Like 4 or 5 years, I'll be into it.
Yeah.
Like my daughter's like a Wiggles groupie. Like she's been to like 3 or 4 Wiggles shows.
Actual shows.
And they're back here in the fall. I believe they're going again. My wife's like a groupie too. And Emma and Lockie are 2 of the 4 Wiggles, and they got married 2 years ago. They've been a couple for like 5 years, and now they just announced that they're getting a divorce. So I just don't know what's real love anymore. I can't go into the weekend knowing that that's true. It's a fact. But it is.
You really seem like this.
Very
this,
distraught over this.
This hit you.
Yeah, this one stings.
Oh.
Anyway.
I'm sorry, man.
Thank you. CFL and TSN tonight. Johnny Manziel making his debut. Let's head to Montreal now. Catch up with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Rod Black. What's up, Rod?
Hello, boys. You know, I hear you. I had 4 in the wheelhouse who were all Wiggles fanatics. And I'm going to tell you, once they become teenagers, which I have now, it is a very short timeline between the Wiggles, Franklin, what else were they heavy into? The movie Space Jam, and now Breaking Bad. So it goes very quickly.
Yeah, that's a good point. Breaking Bad and the Wiggles. There's not much of a connection.
You know what? That actually could be a spinoff for a new Netflix series.
Well, that's what I'm expecting now. Like, you know this isn't going to work out. Emma and Lockie, they can't continue to work together. They're putting together a front, but the Wiggles, they're done. Like, this is basically when Yoko Ono showed up, this is the end of the Wiggles.
Oh, I still think I sang most of those Wiggles songs because I had 4 within the span of 4-5 years. So I don't want to. That brings back nightmares.
Yeah.
That is hard. We did 4 in 6 years. So, Rod, I'm with you, brother.
You guys both have 4 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, you know what it is? If you have, and I think it's a good rule, Bruce would probably concur, is that somebody said, you know, 2 is perfect. 1 is you're kind of always, you need another partner. When you have 3, you might as well have 33 because chaos is chaos.
Yeah.
That's an interesting philosophy.
And I do find that if you take 1 of the 4 children out of the mix, doesn't matter which one, if they go to a birthday party, they go wherever, the chaos level drops by
huge.
Up to 50%.
Yes, huge. And it depends which one it is.
Yeah, with us it doesn't matter as much. There's a little bit of a wiggle room there. Not to use the Wiggles.
Wiggle room. Yeah.
I hate to bring
like
that up
it,
again.
Man. You're breaking my heart here, Bruce.
But yeah, no, like it's... As someone said, some people say when I have 4 kids, they're like, oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
I know. It's like they're at a birthday party and a funeral, the same kind of look.
They're like on purpose?
Yeah, it was intentional, you mean?
And they're all yours? One of mine suspiciously looks like Rod Smith, but that's okay.
Does he have the voice of God?
Yes, he does.
Because then it might, you never know.
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel, what's it like in Montreal? Going into tonight?
Well, as you would expect, I compare this to some of the stuff that we see in the NBA, you know, the hype machine that goes on and a big player comes in after a trade or, you know, the LeBron stuff, not nearly as much, but certainly for the CFL, I cannot recall as much hype around a regular season game with a 2-4 team and a 1-5 team and a player who hasn't even gone behind center in a game yet. yet I think that, you know, everybody knows what Johnny Manziel can bring, and everybody knows the sort of legend of Manziel, his off-field and his on-field. And I think everybody's going to tune in tonight, especially down south. It's on ESPN2, and I have a feeling that, you know, that the number's going to be big there because there's such a curiosity factor around this guy. And I have a feeling that I think people are saying they should temper their expectations, but chatting with Johnny Manziel yesterday, I had a real feeling. And I think he said in his podcast or something like that, that, you know, he's going to throw the crap out of it and he wants to let it rip. And that's the kind of guy he is. I think you're going to see some spectacular flashes tonight. And I think you're going to see some less than ordinary things because it's his first game. So it will be Manziel mania, to say the least.
What about talking to him kind of made you believe in Johnny Manziel tomorrow?
You know what, Bruce, if you're around him, you believe in him. One of the things that about Johnny Manziel, Mike Sherman told me yesterday that when he was recruiting him out of high school and before he went to Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel didn't say two words. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a very quiet guy, but I think through the years with the swagger and with the kind of celebrity status / you know, NFL / NCAA / TMZ and now CFL, I think, you know, I think he's just growing more comfortable around a microphone and around people. I mean, I think his podcast is most listening every week. He's good in it. And he's an engaging guy. I think people, you know, are, and he has some haters and detractors as a lot of people do. But I think at the same time, I think there are a lot of people cheering for him because of the story and the fact that they like this comeback story. So, you get a sense talking to him that he is very contrite, very sincere, and he's brought a lot of humility into this. Watching him at Olympic Stadium yesterday, the walkthrough was a 2-hour walkthrough. You don't see that very often, but I just noticed, like, you know, he already is taking on the role of a leader. And I think that's, you know, so far so good. We'll see. We're all interested in watching this thing tonight.
Rod Black joining us live from Montreal. It's Tiger Cats Alouettes on TSN tonight. Johnny Manziel making his debut as a starter for the Owls. And I had the opportunity to interview Manziel twice over the past 4 or 5 months, and I was impressed. I mean, this is mm-hmm. a guy who he's been trained properly. Like, he is, you don't win a Heisman as a freshman and not be well trained in terms of dealing with people and getting your point across. And I think he understands that ultimately 90% of getting him back to the NFL is what he's going to do on the field. He's got to perform. You know, you've got to play. You've got to put up numbers. You've got to look competent. You got to be a leader, like you just said. But the other 10% really is the image, because that's everyone's known he's got talent. You know, talent has not been disputable when it comes to Manziel. It's can he actually keep it together? And by all accounts, you know, it's early. The jury's still out. But he seems to have figured that part of his life out. And maybe it's a front, maybe it's not. But, I mean, I'm willing to give him a shot. And see what he's got tonight.
Yeah, and why not? And I think you're right. I think, you know, I'm life is about second chances and maybe even third chances to some. And let's face it, the Canadian Football League has been a second chance league for many, many years for a lot of players. And, you know, having been around people, though, that I know that suffer from mental illness or bipolar or are, you know, addicts, that's a day-to-day struggle. And I think those are the type of people too that, you know, you cheer for as well, that you hope they can stay on the rails. And I you know, you kind of wonder about a city like Montreal, and you also wonder about adversity. Johnny Manziel hasn't played a game in, what is it, 951 days, which means he hasn't really been sacked. He hasn't had everybody talks about passes completed. He hasn't had an interception. How is he going to react to that stuff? Because that can be grinding. But I hear you. I think he's, you know, when you have reached kind of rock bottom, and I think in many ways he did, mm-hmm. I think he knows what he's got here, and I think he's got a great opportunity. And I talked to Eric Tillman, guys, a few months ago, or about a month ago, and you know, he wasn't playing, and Jeremiah Masoli, who I'm watching on the field right now, is the reason Johnny Manziel's in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I said to ET, I said, at what point is the agent or Johnny going to stand in and going to go, hey, I came up here to play football, and how are you going to play this poker hand? And E.T. kind of said, no, we're going to... But you knew there had to be a deal made if he wasn't going to play in Hamilton. So, you know, I think it's a great opportunity for him. There's a great irony to it, because Montreal plays right now like the Cleveland Browns when Johnny was with Cleveland. But I'm fascinated. I did the preseason game here, and I thought even in the preseason game, there was some vintage Manziel, and I think you could see some tonight.
You could see flashes in that preseason game. You're right, Rod. Like, when he rolls out... And when the play is breaking down, it seems like he can see the field in a way that he can't necessarily from the pocket from our brief glimpses of him there. My worry would be his agent went on the Barstool podcast the other day and basically said, this is insane that after 4 days, he doesn't know who these guys are. He doesn't know the plays. He doesn't know the playbook. He doesn't know the schemes. He might know the schemes that are being deployed against him because he was a Hamilton Tiger Cat until recently. But I just feel like I'm fascinated to see what happens here. I don't feel like Johnny Manziel is being put in the best the best position to succeed, I guess, is how I would put it.
Well, I think, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And here's my thing. He's the 14th quarterback guy since Anthony Calvillo got hurt to play in Montreal. And I look at down that whole list of players. They never had all the guys that they gave chances to never had a sniff. And yes, a lot of them failed, but they didn't have the experience or I think the chutzpah or swagger that Johnny Manziel has. They did have a Heisman Trophy winner here, remember, and he won his first game in Troy Smith, who did very well, but then, you know, he fell off as well. The CFL, to become a quarterback, and I think Eric Burkhardt is right in some ways, is that, you know, it takes rhythm and it takes repetition, but at some point you got to get in there. And I've never seen a quarterback who had the pedigree of a Johnny Manziel be so protected coming in. I mean, he didn't get a snap anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I thought in some of those Hamilton games there was an opportunity that they could bring some plays in. I mean, you don't have to know the whole playbook, but why not create a play, a Manziel-like play? And so I don't know if that was from the agent. I don't know if that was from him or if it was from June Jones at the time who was trying to protect him as well. But the bubble's off now. I mean, now you got to go play. And, we shall see. I mean, the other thing is that there are a lot of players on the opposing team who probably have the number circled on Johnny Manziel now.
Oh, because, they can't wait to lay him out.
Yeah, every D lineman, Hayes, every D lineman in the Canadian Football League is salivating because they know that there's a potential to get in Sports Illustrated by sacking Johnny Manziel.
Well, that's the truth. You're right, man. Like, you want to get on SportsCenter down in the States, you get on it constantly up here if you get them. But if you want to get on the SportsCenter down in the States, you lay a lick on Manziel tonight, and it will be replayed constantly. It'll be all over Twitter, Instagram. I mean, this guy's a walking, talking meme. You know, like he's waiting to be Instagrammed, so to speak. Like, if he gets laid out and looks disheveled, the whole world's going to see it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Whether he succeeds brilliantly or fails miserably, it's a huge story. Mm-hmm. I think the worst story possibly, and Bruce is the writer, he would probably concur, the worst story possible is that he's mediocre.
He's just okay,
He's just okay.
If he has a Goldilocks game, right? Not too hot, not too cold. That'd be the problem.
Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
That'll be fun tonight. Ticats, Alouettes in Montreal, CFL on TSN. He is Rod Black. You'll have the call. We look forward to it, man. We're rushing home to see it. So have a fun one tonight.
Right.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, anytime, boys. I will say, I always say it should be a good one. I kind of always say that. I think I'm going to say it should be an interesting one.
Yes. That's more
all
appropriate.
Right.
Should be a good one. See you, Rod. There's Rod Black. Should be an interesting one. Yeah, that you don't want a milquetoast stat line. You don't want 270 yards, 2 touchdowns, a pick.
Well, except.
Is that enough? Would that be considered good?
It's what are the parts of it, right? Like if he has 4 plays that are unforgettable, if he has 4 plays that bring people out of their seats, and the rest of the game's only okay, then you can say there were flashes. You could see what he could be. And you could wind up with one of those, like, 15 for 27, 220 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. Or 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Where he doesn't really do that much. He gets sacked a few times. He runs for his life a little bit. I bet Johnny Manziel will do something tonight on the football field that people will go, hey, wow, look at that. And it'll be on a broken play, and he'll create something. But he's also playing for a lousy team against a not great team, but a better team. And he doesn't know the guys on his offense. He doesn't know the schemes. There is no way he is prepared for this.
And I'm not convinced he knows the speed of the CFL. And that's a two-way street. That's the defense, too, because broken plays is where quarterbacks get blown up. Like, Tom Brady doesn't get blown up because he doesn't allow for broken down plays. He sits in the pocket. When he feels pressure, he gets rid of it. Same thing with Peyton Manning. You never saw Peyton get crushed because he never allowed himself to get crushed.
And that's how he played so long.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's the same thing with Brady. Brady turns 41 today. He's 41.
He's taken some shots, but they have limited his exposure.
Yes. And usually the shots are in the biggest moments, like AFC
Baltimore,
title games.
The Giants. Though you can remember
Super Bowls
games.
Where yeah. he's like, I'm going to sit in here because I have to wait. And if I get beaten, I'll take it. He's throwing that ball away in week four against Jacksonville. Like, he's not doing that. Yeah. He's not going to allow that kind of pressure. He'll throw it down and say, I'll live to see another day. He doesn't do that in the biggest moments. You're right, he's been hit. But if you get scrambling tonight, man, that's when you turn your back to the wrong guy. There's a chance Manziel gets blown up. And if he does, that will generate more buzz than a great play. Because him getting blown up means people can say, see, I knew it. I knew he couldn't do it. I knew he was still a punk that couldn't play, et cetera, et cetera. Some hockey news today. We'll get into it with Dave Pullen in the next hour. We'll get back into the Hall of Fame NFL game last night and the lowering of the helmet rule that has just led to like explosive takes and chaos. Yes, like just chaos. Volcanic
not
takes.
Not good chaos, though. We talked earlier about how hockey chaos is the best hockey.
This is not
this
the same
is bad,
kind of chaos.
Bad, bad chaos.
So we'll get to that in Knox County, Tennessee. That's a city or a town or a county that is officially now on the map. We'll tell you why next. You can text us at any point, 10-50-50 with your name. Stan sending us a text saying, hey, boys, great show. I'm a 61-year-old, and I love watching Teen Titans Go with my grandchildren.
Yeah, Stan.
Or by myself.
I'm telling you, like we'll put the iPad on in the car so they can have a TV show on the longer drives. And if Teen Titans Go is the show that's on, I'm happy to.
You're into it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the other stuff,
How about this story about Kane, the former wrestler who...
Like the pro wrestler?
Yeah, the pro wrestler.
With the mask and the...
Exactly, and the fire was always...
Brother of the Undertaker or something?
He was the Undertaker's brother. Paul Bearer was somehow involved in this, so yes. Play Paul Bearer whenever you want.
Oh, yes! Oh, God! Kane is back!
There you go. This guy, I guess he's into politics now, and anybody can get into politics, as we know, and he won the mayoral race down in Knox County, Tennessee. So he is now the mayor of Knox County. So with that being said, we kind of started the show off with this a little bit. I think we need, because we got a mayoral race starting up.
Yeah.
Pretty much officially underway.
Yep.
So in the fall, it's going to be on in Toronto. And we need a celebrity mayor. Like a legitimate celebrity. Not like Mel Lastman, where it's like, yeah, we know about the commercials and all that. But I'm talking like a guy who has no political pedigree whatsoever.
Somebody who is manifestly unqualified but famous.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
Why can't we do that?
Who would you suggest?
Well,
you need a Torontonian.
Yeah, you need someone who lives here.
It can't be Drake.
No, Drake wouldn't do it, and Drake can't do it.
No, he can't do it. We don't have that many local celebrities who stay here.
Could Eugene Levy do it?
I mean, he could. Why would he?
Eugene Levy would be pretty cool. Everyone likes him.
How does he feel about public transit?
I'll bet you Eugene Levy would win running away. I'll bet you would win running away.
Does he resonate with the young people? Do the young
Enough.
People vote?
American Pie. He's the dad in American Pie. Who doesn't?
When was that? When did that
movie come
out?
It was in like 99 that came out.
Yeah, like that's a 20-year-old movie.
That's scary that doesn't constitute as what the young people
and
are
that's
into.
The last thing you remember him doing, right? No disrespect to Eugene Levy, awesome career, love him, he's probably done a lot of stuff since then, but in terms of the stuff that penetrates out to people even who are not Eugene Levy superfans.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, they've got that Schitt's Creek or whatever.
Yeah.
I told you we can't swear on the air earlier.
But you can say that because that's the name of the show.
That's literally the name of the show.
That's the name of the show.
And so maybe, I don't know, I'm throwing Eugene Levy's name into the hat.
I don't know.
I think he'd win.
I just think that, you know, we need someone who's going to, you know, make the city better.
Who cares about that?
Kind of what I'm hoping for. Good policy, transit, quality housing, yeah. Taxes.
Let's just have some fun.
Let's do that. Good parks.
When do we not have good parks?
The parks are okay. You can do
we got great parks in Toronto. Parks, I've never heard parks be an issue for people.
Well, just public.
You actually don't like
I guess
parks?
Public infrastructure, I would say. Public infrastructure.
I think we're pretty good with parks.
Yeah.
Transit, not so much. Your transit's always going to be
could
a problem.
Use a little work.
But that's how Tory won, really, was the smart track. And last time I checked, nothing's really coming.
Yeah, how's that going?
It's just nothing's happened.
They're going to build that one-stop Scarborough subway, though.
Yeah, of course.
How many stops? Just the one.
One stop.
Just the one.
Someone texting and saying, I'm 27. I have no idea who Eugene Levy is. I find that impossible to believe. You're telling me you don't know who Eugene Levy is? That name does not ring any bells? You would know him to see him.
Yeah,
for
of
sure.
course. But, like, does he resonate with people?
Eugene I think Levy. He would. I think he would. Personally, I think he'd win. Let's see if we can come up with some other.
Rachel McAdams.
Well, she would get my vote.
Well, she would
immediately.
Win. She would win, but she has a pretty busy career.
Yeah.
But that's a famous Torontonian who spends time in the city.
Yeah, lives in Toronto.
You know who should run for mayor? Jay Onrait.
Jay would be a good option.
Jay's a guy. Like, people like him.
People are texting him that the O-Dog should run. Oh. Would he get your vote? You know him personally.
You miss 99% of the shots you don't take.
That would be a slogan.
The absolute best candidate with a neck tattoo.
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
There's no way there's anybody more qualified with a neck tattoo.
No one's going to do better than that.
Dave Poulin coming up in the next hour. Pooley's a sophisticated Torontonian. Pooley, I could see doing something.
Yep.
All right, we'll dig deeper into this. We'll get back into the head-lowering rule in the NFL and the reaction to it last night. We saw it for the first time in the Hall of Fame game. Bruce Arthur's in here from the Star. Brian Hayes, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.